All right, good morning, everyone. So after that wonderful discussion of theory, I want to bring it down a little bit to the community where I'm conducting research. My name is Sean Bruno Lewis. I'm a candidate in anthropology. I say medical anthropology. It's actually an ethnography program. I decided along the way that I wanted to go more into medical anthro, largely because the tribe that I'm working with asked me to research diabetes. So I said, okay, give me some time and I'll be back with more experience with diabetes. My talk today is called From CHR to Tribal Gardener, How Three CHRs Use Community-Based Evidence to Change a Diabetes Program. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to secure funding for the head of the diabetes program to come. It was a big a concern and a challenge for me. So today's presentation is my own. In the future, we hope to get one that's jointly presented. We've had a few at the university, but I'm a grad student without a whole lot of funding. I have no financial relationships to disclose, many actual friendships. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about evidence and translation. I'll talk about the research setting where I'm conducting my dissertation research. Then I'll move on to a little bit to transition through translational theories and then about some of the local knowledge. My goal today is actually to talk a little bit more about the story of what happened in research, in my field research. I'm writing my dissertation, so sometimes it's hard for me to see the forest for the trees. I think that's the saying. So I welcome discussion and questions afterward that'll help me out. Basically, at the community I worked with, there are two types of evidences that are in play. And you can see these two types of evidences here. On the left is a form that's used in a diabetes prevention program, and on the right is a watermelon. And it's actually the same watermelon that was in that opening slide. There are all sorts of different assumptions and values that go with each of these two types of evidences. On the left, you see the clinical form, all sorts of different measures and qualities. On the right is different types of evidence that includes a community, includes religious beliefs. You can see soil, plants. This is in the middle of a desert, so it's very dry soil. But there's different assumptions that go into each, and how you work and connect with each depends on where you're coming from. The last presentation closed with recognition that we need to move beyond just the clinical setting, and certainly I view that's the case. As a goal, I want to say partnership's a point of arrival, not departure. And my dissertation research is trying to get at a partnership. It takes place in Isleta del Sur, Pueblo, Texas. The tribe originally was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, or what's today near Albuquerque, New Mexico. And in the 1680s, was dislocated and now is settled in what's El Paso, Texas. It is an urban pueblo, an urban American Indian tribe, which is a little different from the vision we often have of tribal communities. On the bottom left, you can see the international boundary. That's the Rio Grande. You can imagine almost that the tribal land went to both sides of the border. Unfortunately, now only the U.S. side is recognized. But it is urban, and it's also somewhat checkerboarded. You can see different properties throughout the map. There are actually several others and a large ranch. If you zoom in, you can see that checkerboarding even more. This is sort of one of the main districts. It is pretty interesting. You can go from federal Indian land at one moment, cross the street, and then be in city land. So a lot of the programs that are developed nationally may not work in this specific community. If we zoom in even more, it almost looks like a lot of neighborhoods that we might live in. Interestingly enough, though, this particular community has a health center right in the middle of their housing district. So you can wake up in the morning, put on your slippers, and have your blood sugar tested right next door at the health center while having a cup of coffee and talking with people. It's a very wonderful community to work in. Partnership, again, is very important, and if Anna, the head of the diabetes program, was here with me, she'd talk a little bit about this. On one end, I have a lot of academic training from the University of Chicago, from UNM, from different faculty members, but more importantly, there's a lot of community training that went into development of this research. I began working with the tribe in 2002 during a master's. In 2006 through 8, I began a vetting process with the tribe with a lot of visits to public events and meetings. I moved to the tribe in 2008 to develop a dissertation proposal, which is somewhat unusual. Most people have a proposal from the outside, and then they go there and conduct research. I moved there and was a non-paid employee with the tribe and developed a proposal with them, and then in 2009 conducted the formal research. All this trying to get it at a partnership to analyze an issue. And the issue that came up was diabetes as a concern. 19 to 20% of the individuals at the Pueblo are diabetic. There's at least one or two diagnoses each month. But there's very good news, though. I mean, there aren't any minors currently that are diabetic, and the tribe would like to keep it that way. So they suggested we began looking at this sort of issue. So at that point, I said, okay, great. Generally speaking, I am guided with several theories. I don't think we need to talk about these so much, but Federal Indian recognition in politics, I look at the conditions that make diabetes possible, ethnographies of the Southwest, and certainly diabetes in American Indian peoples. I think all of my work is also enmeshed with decolonizing methodologies. So we decided diabetes and these theories. We formed a research team, which actually changed quite a bit. Those are the red additions. And we began to examine some specific issues. Now, on the whole, my research was to look at the historic conditions that shape diabetes and to consider local policies and programs and practices that could reduce it. This might be called exploratory or formative research in some groups. There were three populations, if you want to call them that, I worked with, minors and adults. We wanted to see how they understood diabetes. Concerns of the community health representatives, and again, understanding these broad policies. I like to look at large structures and individual actions. So today's talk would fit more into number two, the concerns and limitations of the community health representatives as they implement programs. We decided on a variety of data to collect. I'm an anthropologist, so it's largely ethnographic, a lot of interviews. I also took food recalls from individuals. People loved that I took photographs, so they gave me permission to take many. All of this data is actually owned by the tribe, so at the end of my research, it goes into their archives. And none of my research can be published without tribal council review and approval. Very interesting part of research, one of the challenges. So today I have to balance the end of the talk because the research hasn't been finalized. So I have to balance making it specific enough to discuss, but not so specific that I might be violating trust. It makes for good discussions back at the res. There's also a lot of quantitative data, surveys. I did supermarket scans, looked at institutional data. You can see some of the evidence I collected on that photo right there, some squash and some watermelons. That was sort of my toolkit right there, field notebook and a pocket knife and gloves for much of the research. A little bit then about the diabetes program before I move on. That is Anna, who I worked very closely with. She's the supervisor of the diabetes program, and she, as you can tell by that picture, has maybe overworked. There's a huge file, but she's holding a nice snack bag that we were making for preschool parents. The diabetes program is like many programs. It's staffed by very few people that might be stretched too thin. They look at improving tribal health policies. They look at tracking diabetic patients, some preventative practices, transports, which is in an urban setting, driving patients to the doctors, and they offer all sorts of classes. There are three CHRs that I talk about in my dissertation more specifically. There's more than that that work in the health center. They all work together while independently in their own specific departments. So translational theories. A little bit about this. Rather than go into a literature review, because that would require its own talk, I condensed it into this sort of a five-step program. You see a lot of people will begin by conducting some sort of field research, and they may, to understand cultural practices, and this may become either a shallow or a deep understanding of culture. You hear that in a lot of it. Sort of shallow might say we have to understand food and cultural foods in certain areas. So if you're developing a program that's in the border of El Paso, Texas, you may have more enchiladas and talk about those, you know, two enchiladas or dos tortillas por día, two tortillas per day. Sort of a shallow, but you could start at looking at culture. A deeper way, to borrow from Gertz, that you see in some of the literature, looks at some of the significance of certain foods. And in the community I worked with, there are certain foods that have deep religious significance. And I would argue that once we understand those significances, we can be more effective. One holiday that's very popular in the U.S. coming up is Thanksgiving and Christmas, there are a lot of foods that people associate with that time. For example, my wife is from an Irish family. They have a food called bark. It's a sweet candy. I never knew anything about it. But in her mind, that bark that is made reminds her of the practice of being with family. So it's communal. And it's a very, that's more of a deeper meaning for food. These translational practices then go on to develop interventions based on clinical evidence. So you start with an understanding of culture. You develop an intervention then that somehow is adapted with these cultural views. You have your treatment, your guidelines, and then you compare whether it worked or not. The general practice I seem to see in the literature, but I haven't completed a review, so I'll leave it at that. And so at the res, we began to collect evidence. And, well, what is that evidence anyway? Some of it, we looked at the age and the date of diagnosis to see if maybe individuals were being diagnosed at a younger age. We noticed that that's not the case. There's some interesting trends right here. You can see a couple of them. There was a new policy developed, so a lot of individuals had to be had to come in and get tested if they wanted to get their enrollment cards. There's also some clustering that looks like it's happening later on, and that's during field research. We also collected evidence with youth. This was a little workshop we held where we asked kids to write down their top three snack foods whilst using a free book that was donated, Eat This, Not That. So you can see one child wrote down Takis, which is kind of like Cheetos, Coke, and M&Ms. They then made healthy food options, or what they perceived as healthy food options, on a plate using those sort of plastic foods that a lot of CHRs have. When we looked at that, we saw sort of trends that you see with a lot of youth, where a lot of the favorite foods are chips and candies, hot Cheetos, Takis, on the border region, a lot of Mexican candies, and then a lot of Rockstar, Monster, and Dr. Pepper. And that came out also in a lot of my food recall interviews. Pretty much the exact same thing started to come out. The quantities, though, were pretty surprising, the quantities of junk food. We also looked at the diabetes programs and some of the evidences that were collected in the diabetes programs. One of them is Balancing Your Life in Diabetes. I don't know if anyone has used these before. They have a lot of forms and paperwork that you're supposed to use, and I didn't really see a lot of people filling out those. But when we took a closer look at some of the programs, we started to see that there's, much like this room, some sort of a gender disparity started to appear. We also noticed that when we looked at attendance over a period of time, we sort of see that that same sort of a difference happening. Oddly enough, there's this fun spike that happened at one point, and that was when there was a gardening activity. So that opened a lot of discussions about, what makes evidence and why do we all of a sudden have a lot of people in a gardening activity? We also considered, which I can't talk too much about today, some of the other types of evidence that people have in the community, and that's religious practices, monthly dances, social dances, and other activities. It's another CHR on the left waving hello, one individual making bread for a feast. And that's me at one of the feast days. I was surprisingly given some clothing, I guess, to wear, and I helped quite a bit with the feast day, serving food and that sort of thing. So CHR started to look at all this evidence while we were in the field and started having these discussions, and they started to see that people were accepting, modifying, or rejecting what they were saying in interesting ways. People were accepting that it's better to drink water, not Coke. That seemed like a pretty standard thing. People wanted to change the fact that education takes place in the classroom, and they saw that from the gardening activity. A lot of people started saying, we want to get out of this. We don't like the way these programs are being developed. And people were totally rejecting that you have to go work out in the gym. And in fact, every time I went to the gym, it was virtually empty, very few individuals. So that we started to have discussions about what this sort of means and what can happen. Well, what came of that is that drinking water, not Coke, which is accepted, can tie into things like water rights within a community. Water in the desert is of special interest, and with Puebloan communities, religious practices and water being connected to religious agricultural practices are central. So water could open up discussions about water rights, the body being healthier. If education in a classroom isn't something that community members want, well, start to explore other ideas, such as gardening or activities out in the desert. And if people are absolutely rejecting a gym, well, where do people exercise? And one possibility is to look at religious dances, where people on a monthly basis exercise. The garden, three gardens were developed. I don't have too much time to talk about those today, except for maybe the larger of the gardens, the Puebloan Garden. It was advertised. On the left, you can see my very boring poster. On the right was one a community member made. Interestingly enough, it does not mention diabetes at all. There's also, people have described this in sort of a gender divide also, and saying the left is sort of institutional and mender, and male on the right isn't. We can have interesting discussions on that. The garden was developed. Interestingly, though, the garden was not developed for food and nutrition specifically. And this is where the deeper understanding of culture starts to come in. A shallow look at culture might look at something like, oh, a garden produces food. A deeper one, especially at a religious, a deeper understanding, especially at a Puebloan group that has deep religious ties to the landscape, might recognize that a garden area has ties with soil, might have ties with air above, and might have ties with water. And you can see each of those in the picture. This particular garden was also placed on religious grounds, which I've covered up for sovereign privacy reasons of the tribe, near a kiva, near dance grounds, and where there's a lot of activity. You can see then also certain plants being grown. In this case, you can see corn on the bottom right, which is used throughout all sorts of religious activities. Apparently, individuals like the garden. The first year is fairly small. You can see a lot of us tilling soil. If you look closely, you might also see the cut telecommunications line for the Pueblo. Oops. But in the second year, the garden grew, much to my surprise, into half an acre. So it's something that is certainly viewed as important for the tribe. Looking forward, as I look forward to completing the dissertation and working with the tribe to consider new intervention practices, we're looking at sort of old being, well, new. And new interventions can't come out of very old practices. On the left, you can see lahapa, watermelon growing. That's growing in a technique that is used throughout the desert to collect water. On the right, you can see a lot of individuals walking along a canal that's for a religious event to notify the community about an upcoming religious activity. On the left, gathering plants also for religious activities throughout the desert. This particular one is by the U.S.-Mexico international boundary. That's the border fence right behind it. And on the right, considering things like water and decolonizing the community. In this case, there are two watering trucks there. One's tribal grounds and one's from a ditch boss about to ask whether they had permission to get the water. New interventions can come out of these very old practices, but in order to make them connect with the community, we have to do this deep examination of culture. So a little bit of discussion. Again, I'm trying to balance forest and trees. Long-term ethnographic research is suggested to really understand these deep cultural practices. Translation should happen at various stages. I think rather than just have translation happening at the beginning of program, maybe blow programs apart and look at them throughout interventions. We don't need to have new interventions in communities. Perhaps we can look at some of the very old classic ways and continue them. And as a result of looking at all these different evidences in this process, the Tribal Council has passed a series of health policies, and so things are certainly moving forward and opening up in a new discussion. I definitely want to say thank you to the Pueblo and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for funding this research. Thank you.